Hey there, Mike.
Hello, sir.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm very good. How are you?
Great. I've got Julio here with me. Julio Ojeda Zapata from, many places. He is the tech pundit for the Pioneer Press, my local hometown newspaper here, the good old St. Paul of Minnesota, of USA. He also is a author of two books now, both Twitter Means Business, but the one I'm more interested in for the purposes of this show, iPad Means Business. He also is a regular guest, you know, semi-regular as it gets, on This Week in Tech, a Legal Reports podcast. So, you know, he's like a big fish in our little small pond here. yeah, it's good. Thanks, Julio, for coming.
Thanks, Patrick. This is actually a big honor for me because I've become a big fan of your podcast. I don't add podcasts to my queue lightly because I'm oversubscribed, but yours has been of great value to me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, that means a lot. You got this great book. I actually wrote the foreword to it, so I'm kind of biased. One of the forewords. The other foreword is written by Scott Bourne. So I have no idea how I ended up there. It's iPad Means Business. And, you know, you talk a lot and have some case studies and really good information, apps, and things like that. Basically how the iPad has really... changed and is changing, you know, I use past tense as if it's not still actively happening, business. And, you know, I want, as someone who has a business, has an iPad, uses an iPad in his business, I'm kind of interested in talking with you a little bit about that. In what ways are you seeing the iPad really kind of being a game changer when it comes to business?
My book is a chock full of case studies that sort of run the gamut. I mean, the variety of uses the iPad is being put to is incredible. It really, the iPad as a work tool basically falls into two categories, consumption and creation. A lot of professionals are using the iPad as an information console. They're carrying it with them, and when they need information, they use the iPad to access their information. Runs the gamut, you know. Doctors. I talked to this architectural firm that has a lot of its workers deployed in the field of supervising, you know, build operations, and they need to consult, you know, their documentation, their manuals, and so forth. And they use like Dropbox like services to access that information. I see that again and again. You know, just it's this information repository in your pocket that sort of taps into the cloud and pulls down the information you need when you need it. So that's sort of the consumption. And then on the productivity side, the information creation, I ran into many examples of people that are very productive on the iPad. A lot of people scoff at the iPad as, you know, potentially a laptop replacement. And it is not fully a laptop replacement, but I ran into many people who are massively productive on it. There's this attorney who he's never in his office. He hates paper. He visits his clients, you know, on a regular basis. He's a very hands-on, very personable kind of an attorney. He'll visit his client, you know, have several client appointments. Then he'll pop into a Starbucks, sit down, open the iPad. He doesn't even have a physical keyboard. He just uses the virtual keyboard. Sits down and just gets to work. All of his documentation, all of his legal documents are on Dropbox. And he's thrilled. I mean, the iPad is his computer. It's his main machine. He doesn't know how he'd live without it. And I run into many examples like that. So again, it's people consuming information and people creating information. It falls into both categories, and it's been massively useful for business in both categories.
Very cool. So, one of the things that I've been consistently amazed with as a small business owner, a micro business, a business of one, is the increasing ways in which the iPad It is an easy and mobile way of not only, you know, staying on top of the needs of my clients and things like that, but also the numerous tools that are available now that allow me, you know, to operate as if I'm a big business. One that I wrote about on Minimal Mac actually today as we record this was Square, which I only recently adopted. I'd read this really fantastic Vanity Fair profile on Jack Dorsey, who created Twitter, and he's the founder of Square. And that the thing that was really kind of compelling to me and compelled me to give it a go was his take on it. That it was more a democratization device that, you know, basically, you know, credit cards in payments for small businesses was this thing that's expensive. You have to buy this card reader or rent it in some cases, you know, this card reading terminal from some company, and then you got another company that is charging you egregious fees for accepting credit cards, and really you know, allows you know, really hampers small business from growing and becoming profitable, having to keep track of all of those fees. Not only that, but, you know, the alternative, I guess, in my case, was PayPal. And anyone who's used PayPal, especially from an interface standpoint, knows what a problem that is. You know, so I decided to give it a try. And I was just amazed, not only by the clean and easy of use of the interface, but the fact that they sent me this little card reader which plugs into my iPhone for free, and that, you know, it's one flat fee, and it's a fair fee, and the amount of time that it takes from the time I swipe the card to the time that money is in my bank account is only a couple of days. You know, unlike, you know, say if someone were to pay me with PayPal, you know, it could be up to a week between the time that I send the invoice, they pay the invoice, and once they pay the invoice, it shows up. You know, I have to go and transfer it to the bank account, and then it's 3 to 5 days before it actually shows up in my bank. You know, but Square has completely changed my game and has actually made taking credit cards fun.
It's interesting that you bring up Square, because I'm a huge fan. I think the whole Square thing is miraculous, that you can use your iPad as your cash register. My book profiles, you know, several owners of small businesses, artists and such, who sell their products that way. So there's some interesting case studies in my book. I've more recently written about companies here in the Twin Cities that do that. And I wrote one of my columns, I reviewed Square, because I've used it myself. I'll give you an example. At the Pioneer Press, I'm the keeper of the swag. newspapers get a lot of products, you know, from companies that want their products reviewed. And the stuff just piles up. I mean, we can't review everything we receive. We get this just massive bounty of books, DVDs, video games. And I'm the keeper of the swag. I have a storeroom at the paper where I tuck that stuff away. And once a year, we have this massive sale where employees, you know, people at the paper can buy it at a discount, buy all the stuff at a discount. We have this huge sale, and all the proceeds go to charity. And in the past, you know, I could only take checks or cash. This past November, for the first time, I could take credit cards. And it was great, because everybody wanted to pay with a credit card, and I had my iPad in a stand. And I didn't use the card swiper. For some reason, it was malfunctioning. And I don't even like the card swiper. It seems awkward to have this thing sticking off the top of the iPad. You could just do all the transactions, you know, right on the screen. You know, just tap in the information. And I was taking credit card after credit card after credit card. And people were amazed. The really cool part of Square is, you know, people sign with their fingertip.
Yeah, yeah, love
and,
that.
And everybody was like, oh, cool. And, oh, cool. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. Isn't this cool?
Yeah.
And so I've used it in ways that have sort of affected my routine very, very profoundly. So I agree. You know, Square is a quintessential example of, you know, how the tablet, you know, with an add-on product, which is a really good idea, can make a massive difference in somebody's business productivity.
Yeah. So, you know, with the release of the iPad 2, you know, what other things do you see kind of have changed, you know, with the more processing power, obviously, you know, allow for even more robust apps to come out of it? I know you've done some thinking on that, and, you know, are you planning on writing a bit about that and updating the book?
Yeah, I'm writing an add-on chapter. And the iPad 2 is very, very interesting to me because it's changed the conversation a little bit. You know, before the iPad 2, there was still a lot of debate. Is the iPad primarily an information consumption tool, or is it a tool for information creation? Can you create information on the iPad? And a lot of people were in the latter, it's not a very good information creation tool. A lot of people were very adamant about that. The iPad 2 has sort of, I think, put that whole thing to rest in some very interesting ways with GarageBand, with iMovie. I think Apple was sort of, you know, the old adage, show, don't tell. It was basically responding to this criticism by showing people that, yes, you can create information on the iPad. And people have really gone to town with this. I wrote about a local Best Buy executive who witnessed an explosion. He filmed the explosion with his iPhone, transferred the video to the iPad, edited it, uploaded it to CNN iReport. It was very shortly thereafter shown on MSNBC. He was kind of a citizen journalist using his iPad as a news a video news editing tool. I'm in the process of writing about a local band, a band whose debut album was created entirely on the iPad with GarageBand, with the instruments, you know, using the microphone to record. And so with the addition of the camera, with the added power under the hood, with some of these artistic tools, it definitely is a productivity device, but it's we've switched to the other side of the brain. A lot of the discussion before was about business productivity, but now we're talking about creative productivity.
Yeah.
And so people are getting a lot of business use out of the iPad, but in some new artistic, creative ways that hadn't really been part of the conversation before. So the whole thing is evolving. It's shifting in very fascinating ways.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, what do you see as the, you know, how do I put it? You know, one of the things that I find fascinating still about the iPad and its demand is the way that it is appealing to people, to users who never would have considered a computer before, and in many cases, you know, a Mac. You know, I've got, you know, I know several people who are PC people, you know, and have asked me, hey, you know, would the iPad work with my PC if I were to get an iPad? You know, and you know, certainly I think that's that's part of the conversation, part of the game that's not really being talked about. What do you think about that?
Well, a lot of people believe that increasingly the iPad can be somebody's only computer. I mean, if you're an elderly person or somebody that's very computer phobic and just wants a simple device to use for email, to browse the web and so forth, you know, a definite possibility. And I haven't run into very many examples of that yet, but the potential is there. And interestingly, a coworker of mine who until recently and still does not have internet access in her home. She does not do internet in her home at all. She likes like going home and being cut off from the internet and just relaxing. But she's a big bicyclist, though. She's a big cyclist, and she does a lot of texting on the go. And she suddenly realized, you know, I should have a smartphone. So she got a Verizon iPhone. And the Verizon iPhone is not an add-on to whatever computer she's using. It is her computer. She does not have another. She has a very ancient PC stuck in a closet, but the iPhone is her only computer outside of the office, and that easily, you know, translates over to an iPad. My mother was visiting for Christmas. She's not a gamer. She's in no way, shape, or form a gamer. But she went absolutely berserk with Cut the Rope and Angry Birds and Plants vs. Zombies. She went absolutely nuts. She's a big cross. She likes to do crossword puzzles on her Mac, and I showed her how she could do crossword puzzles on the iPad. And I'm sure she's going to get an iPad at some point soon, because just sitting on the couch in my living room for an hour made her a convert. You know, she's an elderly person, somewhat computer phobic, but she got, like little kids get the iPad, she just got the iPad right away.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned the gamer thing, because I wasn't a gamer anyway until Mike and his cohort, Terry, suggested I try Angry Birds, and, you know, now I'm, you know, there's several hours of my life that I not only won't get back, but I don't want back, because they were a lot of fun.
Ironically, none of those games appeal to me personally. I just don't like them. I'm a Maelstrom guy. Every so often, I'll dust off Maelstrom on the Mac and go berserk for 48 hours.
So there's not any games on the iPad that have really been oh gosh, this is just terribly addictive.
They're amusing and fun, and I enjoy them, but they just haven't sunk their claws into me the way the classic Mac Maelstrom game has. So
what has me gripped right now is Tiny Wings.
Yeah, that's the new thing.
Oh my gosh, it's not on the iPad, and I don't know why. I wish it were. I think it would be gorgeous on the iPad.
It looks good though, like pixel doubled.
Yeah, does it?
Yeah, it does. It does. It holds up quite well, and it's actually easier to play.
I'll have to install it on my iPad now, because one of the things I find annoying is if you're syncing both the iPhone and the iPad to the same device, if you download one, download something to your iPhone, and it backs it up, syncs it to your computer, and then the next time you sync your iPad, it ends up on there, and it's like, well, I don't know if I wanted to put that on there. So I almost always, it was one of the first things I look for when I pick up my iPad after it's been synced with my iMac is, go to the last page and see what applications I don't want on there and delete them. But I guess I should have left Tiny Wings on there. Hey, Mike?
Yeah, it's worth a go. Gideon of the Icon Factory wrote this massive love letter with Tiny Wings, in which he talks about all sorts of strategy and stuff. It really made me laugh, and he took it. I'll send you a link, Pat.
Oh, you have to, because those have to go in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. And it says about how much easier it is to play on the iPad, and it is. It makes my eyes go a bit funny, but that's another story.
I'll definitely have to take a look at that.
But the iPad, for entertainment purposes, has really been wonderful for me in another way. I use it to do a lot of recording of TV shows on my Mac, and I watch them on the iPad, and often I'll sync them to the iPad. But lately I've been going crazy with AirPlay.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got my wife and son are away for a week, and so I've gone a little crazy. I've littered my house with speakers and all kinds of multimedia devices in every room, and I'm wandering from house to house with my iPad and accessing my music and watching my TV shows.
Lovely.
I've turned my house into this temporary high-tech bachelor pad, and doing massive experimentation with this stuff, and I'm just absolutely having a ball.
Lovely. And that brings me to something else I wanted to talk about, because I know you're a big fan. So you've been recording TV shows on your iMac. Do you still use the
Elgato,
iTV?
I have traditional Comcast cable in my house, and the standard set-top box in the living room with our big screen TV. But I have another cable drop in my home office, and there's no set-top box. The coax goes directly from the wall to my Elgato. The Elgato goes into the Mac, and that's my DVR. That's my TiVo. That's how I record all my shows. Last night I watched the event, that I had just recorded. And my iMac is sort of my entertainment hub, and everything sort of everything sort of extrapolates from there. I have an Apple TV in the living room, and I access, you know, my iTunes library that way.
Nice.
I have an AirPort Express hooked up to a speaker in right. another room, so I can access my music that way.
Right.
And, back to your point, the Elgato is another technology that never ceases to amaze me. You know, I've been using it for years, and I still think it's miraculous compared to, for instance, the DVR that Comcast provides.
Right. I mean,
prehistoric, just awful. Yeah.
I mean, it really is, actually. And you turned me on to the Elgato, and I really like mine a lot when I use it. I don't use it as much because Bethany and I don't watch a lot of TV, you know. But at those times when I need to watch something even uh-huh. over the air, I've got a digital antenna that I've got hooked up to the Elgato that I plug into the iMac that we use as our air quotes television, and like when we watch the Oscars that way, we watch the Super Bowl that way, when there's something broadcast that we want to watch, that's what we use to watch it, and it's fantastic. Now,
I'm not a sports fan, but I recorded the Super Bowl just so that I could scrub through the high definition recording and watch all the commercials.
Awesome. So now on the iPad, do you use Elgato has an app that's specific for their ITV, right, to be able to not only schedule recordings and such, but also to stream stuff? Do you do that?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Elgato has not nailed that part. The part the recording TV shows on the Mac, they've really nailed that. But the part about distributing, streaming the content to other places, they haven't really nailed that down. Like, for instance, they just released an update for their iOS apps that makes them AirPlay compatible.
Okay.
And I've been, for the past 24 hours pulling my hair out trying to get it to work.
Mm.
And the Apple equivalent, streaming your video and your audio for using AirPlay, it just works.
Yeah.
And Elgato hasn't really nailed that. And so I kind of always export my Elgato recordings to iTunes.
Yeah.
And then use them that way. The other thing I meant to mention, back to Comcast. Comcast does have this cool iPad and iPhone app where you can access your TV listings.
Yeah, is that part of their Xfinity thing?
Xfinity. You can have the listings on your iPad, and if you want to watch something, you just tap, and boom, it shows up on your TV. And if you have the Comcast DVR, you can set your recordings. You can do that anywhere. If you're around the world and you realize you forgot to set a recording. It really comes in handy. So these are examples how the iPad, when I'm at home, has sort of become my entertainment hub. My window into my music, to my TV shows, my videos, and so forth. It's I can't tell you how amazing it is.
All right. Well,
yeah.
We've run into our time for this episode, but we're actually going to continue talking because I think our next conversation could easily work out into another show. So we're going to end it here. But first, I don't want you to leave this show without plugging your book, which I'll have in the show notes a link to, obviously, but also. Hey, just say it right now, just in case there's someone listening, they want to pull over to the side of the road and look it up on the internet. So where can we get your book?
Well, you can buy it, through the, standard methods. You can buy it on Amazon in ebook form or as a physical copy. It's on the Apple iBook store. If you just want information about it, just go to the book's website, which is iPadMeans.biz. That's iPadMeans.biz.
Very cool.
And you'll have all the information right there.
Very cool URL. iPad means business. Mm-hmm. And Julio, thanks a lot for being on.
It's an honor. As I said, I'm a big fan of the show.
All right, thanks. All right, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you, Julio.
Thank you.
All right, well, we'll talk later.
We will indeed.
Bye.
Bye.